asked me, I'm not all that familiar with this material, what would be a good way to start reading it? This is a huge corpus of material, volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes. How do you get started? I think the best book to read is a book by a Roman Catholic scholar named Boniface Ramsey, R-A-M-S-E-Y. Boniface Ramsey, and the title of the book is Beginning to Read the Church Fathers. Beginning to Read the Church Fathers. And it's a book that's topically arranged, Trinity, Incarnation, Atonement, Resurrection, and so on. But if you're wanting to step into this literature, what he does is he's created a reading program. A reading program where you can go in there and start, for example, if you're a beginner and not familiar with the literature, he'll list the works to begin with. There's boxes by, I believe, remember, seriously, correctly, there's a box by each work. You check it off as you work your way through. Intermediate level, then the deep water. Maybe Augustine on the Trinity, something like that. I think that's the best book to begin with. Boniface Ramsey. Then there was a question about, can you read? The principle of need, during that, the principle of need, the principle of necessity, rather than the principle of desire or want. And here's the book. It's edited by, so you'll just be reading the patristic literature, just be reading the fathers with short intros to different material. The editor is a scholar down at, I believe it's at the Catholic University in Washington, Peter Phan, P-H-A-N. P-A-H-N, Peter Phan, and I think the title of the work is called Social Thought. It's part of a series on the fathers. Social Thought. And it's published by Michael Glazier, G-L-A-Z-I-E-R, and also by the folks up in Minnesota. I think it's either Liturgical Press or the Cistercians up there. One of those two. It's part of a series of books that you can get. And it's a really good book. And rather than simply a line or two talking about the issue of need and necessity, you'll have entire sections where they're talking about the very issues that Augustine is talking about with the book. It's a really good book. In fact, that whole series is really good. And there's got to be 35, 40 books in that series.
You're totally insane, and I am. For $249, you can get the complete set of the Ante-Nicene and Nicene Fathers from Christian Book Distributors, and it's $100 more for shipping.
Yeah, for that series, you never pay the whole price.
Yeah.
The whole price would be like $1,200.
Yeah, it's heavily discounted right now.
You can get it way down there in the 200s. My recommendation would be also, download it on your Kindle or your iPad, and you can get it for like $1 a volume. Buck.
From
and
what
so,
source? From what source?
Go to Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, go to Amazon and type in Nicene, Post-Nicene Fathers, Ante-Nicene Fathers, and it'll pop up. I spotted it there, and I thought, wow, what's this all about? And then it was so cheap. With my wife looking, I started downloading.
It's also available on the Calvin website on Christian Ethereal Library, I think, mm-hmm. And it's all free. And you can search it.
Yeah, because I think it's in the public domain.
It is, yeah.
So,
what
I just
read.
Go ahead.
The whole mess of church.
So there's a Calvin College website.
Yeah, Christian Ethereal Library.
Ethereal Library.
Christian Classics Ethereal Library.
Yeah, Christian Classics Ethereal Library. And I think if you can get something where it's just light in your hands, for me, large print. So last night, you know, I watched some baseball, whatever, on my iPhone. And then in the sack, and I thought, there's my Kindle by my bed, and I just grabbed it. Next thing you know, I've read a few chapters of Tertullian. So I think with And if we do that, it's like with the Bible. You know, we can read the Bible once a year if we're just systematic about it. So if you look at the entire corpus of patristic literature, it's really intimidating. But if you just start with those small steps, you might want to start from the beginning or use a guide like Boswell Ramsey and try to find an accessible translation, not one that's sandy, not one that you read and you go, I'm getting a headache here, but one that's lively and accessible, and I think it'll be encouraging for you.
I have a question about the On the Providence of Life. I have the multi-set volume. Is that a good translation, or is there one you would recommend?
On the Providence of God.
On the Providence of God, yes.
The one by Chrysostom?
Yes, sir.
The English translation?
Yes, sir.
It's really good.
Okay.
I did it.
I was the translator.
So you would recommend it.
It's really good. So what I'm trying to do is just make it lively and accessible and so on. And then in Learning Theology on the Church Fathers, that what we happen to have, there's two chapters in there where I just drew on that word, basically. So you'll get some chunks out of that translation and so on. Yeah.
Is that a setup or just...
That's like $50 here, $25 here. So we're going to take a look at Cashin now and Abba Isaac. I think this is a really interesting text. And as we do so, and as I introduce you to these two, and I've got actually an interlocutor named Germanus. Germanus is the person that Cashin uses as the one asking the questions of Abba Isaac. Really? So you have Abba Isaac, you'll have Germanus, and in the background, John Cashin. John Cashin is very important in the history of the church in terms of the rise of monasticism in Western Europe and what we would know as Southern France. And he's written a couple other books actually. He's written a book called The Institutes in English. He's written a book called The Conferences. And the best translations of both of them are in from the Paulus Press, if memory serves me correctly. I'm getting a little bit scared here because I'm not sure that that's right, but I think I'm about 95% sure. And I bet you can get them on your iPad and Kindle too. But the translator is Boniface Ramsey. Yeah, so that's why they're good, because he knows how to build bridges into this material. So he's translated both the Institutes and the Conferences. So the background here is we get into this this interview, which is really what a conference is. You read the conferences. The conference is an interview. We have a question of what is prayer, human life itself before God offers prayer, this question of wordless contemplative prayer. There's wonderful teaching. I don't know if we can get into it today, but at the end of conference 10, there's about a page or two where Abba Isaac coaches on the Psalms and reading the Psalms. And he's a lot like Athanasius at this point. Here's another one I'll toss at you. Athanasius to Marcellinus on the Psalms. To Marcellinus, Roman, on the Psalms. And both just coach on reading the Psalms, praying the Psalms. Why are we doing this? What's the purpose behind it? We might be able to get into that a little bit today. And then Abba Isaac is going to talk in some detail about Psalm 70, verse 1. Now, I don't necessarily agree with everything that he's going to say in this conference, but it's really interesting to me that of all the texts in the Bible, you got the Sermon on the Mount, you got Paul's letters, you got Revelation, the Gospels, Isaiah, all of those texts, this Abba pulls this one verse out and says, this is the heart of the matter. Now, I was reading him last night, and I go, why did you do this? And there's a rhyme and reason to what he's saying. So that's what we'll be working on here. And then we'll tie things up today with, what did we learn together? And how can we take what we've learned together and build a bridge into our modern context? It's kind of that ancient future movement. How can we do that with this kind of literature? Most of what we haven't done biblical exegesis. Come with a specific biblical text. If you're interested in that, you can get, for example, an ancient Christian commentary on Scripture. That's Genesis through Revelation, 29 volumes. And I can probably get you set for a relatively good price. If you're interested in theology, that would be kind of a different seminar. It would be a lot of fun to do. All right, so conference pencil. Again, remember, a conference is an interview. It's like John Cashion is the Larry King of the desert. So what he's done is he's gone and he went out to the desert. He heard about these monastic communities in the desert. And he spent 10 years out there. And as he was out there, he would really interview, talk to, listen to some of the Abbas that we've been speaking of over these 2 days. So the conference is an interview. What about this particular interview, this particular conference? So Germanus, who's a young Christian, young monk, wants to learn how to pray unceasingly. And for these monastic communities, that's a question that they pondered and attempted to practice. Practice. They wanted to learn, is it possible to take what Paul says in that Thessalonian correspondence and learn to pray without ceasing? How can a human being learn to do that? What kind of prayer is that? And so these authors are very interested in that. Of course, they take these texts with great seriousness. So that's the question that Germanus poses at the beginning of the interview. And then the rest of the interview is taken up with answering that question. It bounces all over the place, and lots of other things will intersect, as we'll see in just a moment. But if you can, even at the beginning, keep Psalm 70, verse 1, in the back of your mind, because that's a tool. That text is a tool that Abba Isaac suggests that we can use to learn how to pray this way. They're going to be very interested here on the idea of purity, solitude, and prayer. Now, when we think of purity, oftentimes in a modern context, if we're talking about the issue of purity, it seems like we talk about sex a lot. They're interested in sex, but that's not the first thing on their mind. What they want to create in the desert is a mind that is unmixed. Unmixed. A mind that can, as it's increasingly pure, of what they would call greed. You ever run across this phrase? The logosmoi. L-O-G-O-S-M-O-I. L-O-G-O-S-M-O-I. The logosmoi. One of these authors describes the logismoi that incubate in the human mind like maggot eggs. He says, this Alba argues that there's something about the human mind in its state apart from God where its thinking becomes terribly confused, decayed, and the logismoi develop and rise to the surface. They're also in the background and they distort human thinking. And they distort prayer. So the goal of this Abba is to teach Germanus how to use the solitude of the desert, the kind of prayer that he'll suggest, O Lord, make haste to save me, O God, make speed to save me and help me. That prayer, to learn how to be in a state of prayer. Anyway, let's start with number one. Then. That background that I've given you is totally helpful. But let's try it now. Here's the background. What I've called Theophilus' letter in the sad situation of Sirachia. Here's the deal. Theophilus of Alexandria was bishop of Alexandria when, for example, Chrysostom was bishop in Constantinople. He's you know, he has a fairly high level of theological sophistication and so on, but you would not have liked him. You would not have liked him. He was one of the more scandalous bishops of the history of the church. But he knows his theology. He knows the tradition, as we might call it. So he sent out a festal letter. He sent out a festal letter that had to do with the date of Easter and so on. But in that letter, he'd also become concerned because he had his bishop in Alexandria, but that's a large, large diocese, and he knows he has these Egyptian monks living out in the desert in community, and he feels responsible for them. And he has heard that they're praying in a way that's disturbing to him, and he thinks, and I think he's probably right, violates the tradition of the church. So he sends out a festal letter. And the problem is this. A lot of these monks are untrained, and they have been reading the Bible, number one, in an old translation, which in an old text that was not all that great. And on top of that, when they would read passages concerning God, about God's face shining upon somebody, or God's right arm, or whatever it might be, they had interpreted those texts literally. So God looks like us. In some ways, a large human being. It's called, technically, the anthropomorphic heresy, where anthropomorphisms, where God is pictured as having human attributes for the sake of helping the readers of the Hebrew text and so on understand more deeply who God is and so on. Those were taken literally by these monks. So when they were praying in their mind, think this through with me, in their mind as they're praying, as Serapia is praying, he's seeing a large human being. And in his mind's eye, when he's praying, he can see this human face and a human body looking at him, and he's related to that human body and that human face as God for well nigh 40 years. And so what happened was Theophilus sends out a letter and says, it's got to stop. God is not a large human being, and God doesn't have a physical body. God's not localized in space and time in such a manner. I want you to stop praying like that. And it's just that festal letter, a strong response from a lot of monks. And when these, if you study the history of the Spirit, when these folks get mad, they can cause a lot of problems. And so what happens is, in the church where Cassian has been attending services, this festal letter is presented, Serapion is presented by Cassian is sitting in the audience. This is the festal letter has been strongly resisted within the monastic community. And so a well-known teacher from Constantinople named Photinus comes to church. He's highly respected by everybody. And he tells the monks, Theophilus is right, that God is not embodied. And then Photinus begins to talk about God. God is invisible. God is infinite. Just characteristic after characteristic after characteristic. And Serapion, among them being incomprehensible, infinite in being, all those things. Serapion was hearing this teaching. He willingly submits to the teaching. He falls to the floor in church, and it's very sweet. And among other things, he said, "They've taken away my God, and I don't know where to find him." And that is how Cassian chooses to begin the conference, the interview, with his poor mom lying face down, saying, "They've taken away God. I've prayed like this all these years, and now I'm being asked to pray in a really different way. And I don't know how to do it. And it makes me want to cry." And he's lying on the floor in church. And that's how a lot of the other monks were feeling. So what Cassian is doing in the interview with Abba Isaac is he's trying, through Isaac, I believe, and through Germanus' questions, to teach folks how to pray in a different way. Not to God like God is a big human being, but how can you pray to a God who by definition is infinite, incomprehensible, wondrous light and glory and power, who, yes, in the person of the Son, has joined the Son's divine nature, the human nature, and become incarnate on our behalf. But in terms of praying to God, if God is not like a big human being, embodied, vocalized, and so on, how do you pray? And when Isaac, think about what we were saying about the previous overhead, where there was the contemplation mentioned and so on. What Isaac is going to advocate is a kind of wordless prayer where we're raised up and see something that's so wondrous and beautiful, something we're wired to see as God's image bearers, and we see it, and we move into it, and we contemplate it, and it takes your breath away. Again, if you were with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, and he's transfigured before your eyes, there would be a movement outside of yourself. Would there not? There would be a movement. You're not thinking about yourself. You're not centered on yourself. You're looking on a glory that's so wondrous, you have no categories for it other than you want to keep looking at it. And the result of looking at it and dwelling in it and pondering it is love. Because that glory that you're looking at is personal love manifested as light and power and all of these characteristics. I have not experienced that kind of prayer. But I think I'm starting to at least understand the dynamics a little bit. And every once in a while, I'll try to put myself with the disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration in my mind's eye. Think about that. I'm using patristic language. In my mind's eye, trying to see it. But I've got to move beyond myself. And the problem is, I'll put myself in Germanus' shoes. The problem is, I've got a mind that bounces all over the place. There's still a gizmoid to be cleansed. I'm in an environment where I'm seeing things all day long, hearing things all day long that distract me. There's a mirror within me that's meant to capture that light and reflect it back, but daily it's like the mirror gets smeared. And then I don't see as clearly as I desire to see. Make sense? So I need to be pull out the Windex continually and be spraying it on that mirror so that I can see something that I'm wired to see, but I can't describe it in words themselves. So that's the situation of Germanus, that's the situation of Serapion, that's the situation of Cassian, and that's what Abba Isaac is going to be addressing here. So that in some way, we can see it all the time. And for Abba Isaac, that's what unceasing prayer would be. An inner vision of this glory and beauty that lasts and lasts and continues and continues. So that would be his goal. It's a response to the questions that Germanus poses. So this is Germanus and Isaac interacting with one another, and I believe that this is from Conference 9, the previous interview. There's two that are linked together here. Isaac's response to a question of Germanus, who's wondering, who am I and the way I've been formed and shaped over my personal history? How is that affecting how I can pray? And all Isaac says, well, it's important. Basically what he says is the person that you are, Germanus, the person that you are before you begin to pray, you're going to take in prayer with you. So you can see why I think why Abba Isaac would be thinking, as he's talking to this young monk about the discipline, about coaching him to live in such a way that the person that he is when he comes into prayer is that mirror that can then reflect that glory clearly. Make sense? So he says here, what we wish to be while praying, we ought to be before we begin to pray. The praying mind cannot help being fashioned by its earlier condition. Gosh, I'm
steady and everything. Yeah, that clicks for me. That's why we're Christ athletes. That's why we need to enter into the discipline, have a regimen, be transformed and shaped in such a way that when I pray, I'm not bringing a complete knucklehead in prayer. Rather, I'm bringing a human being into prayer who's wired for it. But then my mind, my heart, my body, all these things that are connected. He says the praying mind cannot help being fashioned by its earlier condition. So in the next week or two, you might ask yourself the question, how have I been formed, fashioned, shaped by my life experience, by my habit patterns, by my choices, by how I've chosen to exercise my will, by the nature of my desires? Are they healthy, ordered desires, or are they still some disorder? And what he's arguing, what Bob Isaac's arguing, is that person is going to come into prayer. So he just says that the praying mind cannot help being fashioned by its earlier condition, cannot help its earlier thoughts lifting it upward to heaven or pulling it downward to earth. When he thinks about that upward movement, he's thinking something like transfiguration.
The idea of what's being called lifted up into heaven is wonderful, but sometimes if you think of being pulled downward to earth, I think that can be a positive thing too, as God lays on our hearts the concerns that He has for the world. You know,
You're right.
I think that it can be this is the good, and then downward to earth that's the bad. No, because we're called to be in fellowship with God, but ministering on the earth too, and so a combination of the two sends me to that's the trajectory.
I think you're right. And so I'm trying to think about Abba Isaac. If he was what would Abba Isaac say?
Yeah.
And he'd probably stare for a minute, and then he'd probably say something like yes. Yes. Yeah. But then he would say, and what of Lucas point? So when he hears, who's this thing? When he thinks of this downward motion, he's not specifically thinking of the wonder of creation and so on. He's thinking of something that's gone wrong, that's infected us, distorted us, and we need to move away from that aspect of things so that the mirror becomes ever more clear.
Something like that. It's different than Gnostic dualism.
Yes. Oh, yeah. These folks. That's right. Well, these folks love the incarnation.
Yeah.
They love the Eucharist and so on. But they still have this background. It's a little bit. I would be really like you, Carol. I'm more earthy in some ways than they are. But I think that he would probably be thinking of these rhythms of our lives and how they can be problems for us, particularly regarding habitual patterns of thinking and behavior. So what he starts to do is that this is where they're gifted. Rather than simply critiquing Germanus and say, you should get a lot farther along than you are. Now what's the matter with you? Now we really get that he comes alongside, and then we have a long section here in the conference, and then I'll drop something else in regard to Psalm 70, verse 1, of these common struggles that Abba Isaac says, son, know that your experience is not foreign to me. We struggle with all of these things in the desert. This is the movement that Carol kind of back to earth. These are the kinds of things we're struggling with. Some of these, let's just take a look here. Some of these have to do with things that we mentioned yesterday. But when he expands a little bit on them, this is why I added this slide, because I thought it was very interesting. But he focuses upon it. So we have in the desert, and with human beings in general, lots of issues regarding food. So you have some monks out in the desert, and when acidity hits, you know, that noontime devil, whatever, they start thinking about food. They want to eat more and more. In fact, the desire to eat increases rather than decreases. The desire for food. So we have gluttony, which we're eating too much. Or if not eating too much, we would if we could. thing being in the desert. So it becomes the focus of your attention. See what he wants to do? He wants to help Germanus with his attention. He wants to draw him back to prayer. So he says, these things can diversify. So we have the issue of food. Now there's some folks out there who have an exaggerated extreme asceticism, and they're not eating what they should eat. So you have some monks who will go back in the community maybe for a communal meal on Saturday and Sunday, maybe during the week as these communities develop, and they're looking at the food that's placed in front of them, and they're not eating it. Because they're thinking, they're trying to become ever more angelic. And Abba Isaac doesn't like that. Anthony would not have liked that. Abba Holman would have liked that, if you remember, and so on. So we can move in two different directions here. Eating too much out there, or desiring to eat too much, or not eating what we should be eating. I found this really encouraging. He mentions the struggle that some monks have reading the Bible. So some, when they start, it's like, if you experience this yourself, and you sit down and I don't think I'm going to read the text of Scripture, and some of you got a headache, or you're distracted, or there's like a, it's like the Henry Nouwen says, and your mind becomes a banana tree filled with monkeys. all, you know, cackling away. Or it's like there's mosquitoes that suddenly are, and things you haven't thought of for the whole day suddenly are in your thinking, in your mind, it's driving you crazy. He understood that. A lot of the monks, it's interesting, headaches, or, and then they would feel guilty, they start to recite the Psalms, maybe some of them might have a text of Scripture that they've been given and they're supposed to memorize it during the week or whatever, and they start falling asleep, nodding off, and then they associated guilt. Some struggle with insomnia. That's really hard. If you're up all day long, and finally it's time to sleep, and you can't turn off your mind and fall asleep, it's torment. And some struggle with that. They're still human. Others struggle with the kinds of sexual temptations that we were talking about yesterday. Some, and he breaks these apart, some are tempted to become angry. Avarice, where the focus of their thinking becomes what they've given up. It's very interesting in Athanasius' biography of Antony. Antony moves outside his village, he's about 18 or 19, and for the first few years of his life, as Athanasius portrays it, he struggles with all of these things. In fact, he'll be outside his village and he'll be walking along and suddenly there's a gold plate lying in front of him in the dust. Or coins. Or other things that he really wasn't all that concerned about. It's suddenly the center of attention, attempting to divert him from his location. Temptations to anger, avarice, melancholy, sadness, acidity, the noontime devil. This is boring. I'm sick of it. I was good for 2 weeks, a month, this has been a year. I would rather do anything than this. And now I have a whole day ahead of me with no distractions other than me and these things raising their heads. Vanity, those are monks. And pride, those are monks who think, I'm doing great. I'm something to look at. In fact, the brother over the hill, he should be coming over here and looking at me. Perhaps I should go pay him a call and share with him the richness of my life. That kind of self-satisfaction. Abba Isaac mentions it. Almost, look how much I've grown. What's your problem? What sins are you harboring? Why aren't you growing at the pace I'm growing at? Those kinds of issues. And then wandering thoughts. Spiritual dryness. Where they're in the desert and then suddenly their spiritual life dries up and what was once grapes, small raisins at best, demonic attack, all of those things he talks about for about 4 or 5 pages and just one after the other. And it's really sweet and kind and direct. because he's trying to help somebody learn how to pray. And he knows anybody, and I think it's true today, anyone who's going to enter into prayer deeply is sooner or later going to face all of these things. It's going to happen. So the wisdom of the desert can be something that we move into our world. Now, before we get to meditating on the Psalms, let's talk about Psalm 70, verse 4. And then we'll ask you a question. So, this Abba is looking at Germanus and says, if you're struggling with any of these things, I want you to do something for me. We've been doing this in these monastic communities for years. I'm paraphrasing, but this is kind of part of the matter. Your mind needs to be tethered. It needs to be controlled. It needs to be at peace. And there's a way that I can teach you how to do this. And here's how. I want you to practice this. Remember, I was going to say, practice. We're talking about practice. So he said, practice. I want you to practice this. I believe, Abba the Abba says, that this verse sums up everything and is a prayer that is apt for any possible human situation. Anyone. And I was reading last night in my hotel room thinking, well, I don't really think. And I couldn't think, I myself could not think of a single situation it would not apply to. Which is, oh God, make speed to save me, or Lord, make haste to help me. And I thought, and I couldn't come up with one that text is not applicable to. From a particular struggle, particular relationship, particular sin, whatever, it seems to apply across the board. And they'd spotted it in these monastic communities. Because what he wants to do is settle Germanus' mind down. Just settle him down. So in the interview, Germanus keeps asking him questions, and he keeps coming back to this basic prayer, pray this prayer. Psalm 70, verse 1, pray this prayer. Oh God, make speed to save me. Oh Lord, make haste to help me. And so then he says, do it. I want you to do it consciously and continually. And the discussion goes on, and he keeps coming back. He says, that's the prayer. That's the prayer. To settle your mind. Would it cleanse the mind? For example, would it quiet those monkeys from cackling? Yeah. Would it tend to cleanse? Is there a better prayer if we've been struggling with what we've seen, or what we've heard, or how words have been used against us? Is there a better prayer than to sum it all up, Lord, help me? It's almost like the Kyrie Eleison. Lord, have mercy on me. And he says, just keep praying. Keep praying. And when your mind starts to wander, Lord, just, God, make speed to save me. Make haste to help me. Keep coming back. Keep coming back. And this Abba is convinced that in time, this monk's mind and behaviors will settle down. And then he moves from that particular prayer, that tethering, to the Psalms themselves. And this is what he says. And this sounds so much like Athanasius in terms of the coaching that Athanasius will give on the Psalms. He says, for example, if we have the same attitudes of heart wherein the psalmist wrote or sang his songs, we shall become like the authors and be aware of the meaning before we thought it out instead of after. The force of the words strikes us before we've rationally examined them. And when we use the words, listen to this now carefully. When we use the words, we remember by a kind of meditative association our own circumstances and struggles, the results of our negligence or earnestness, the mercies of God's providence or the temptations of the devil, the subtle and slippery sins of forgetfulness, or human frailty or unthinking ignorance, all these feelings we find expressed in the Psalms. So he says, not only do I want you to pray, Psalm 70, verse 1, I want you to become like the psalmist. I want the psalmist's experience to be your experience. I want your experience to move into those psalms. And I want you to pray them again and again and again. And he's saying positively, he's saying everything you need is there. Just like in that Psalm 70, verse 1, everything you need is there. Also, everything that you're struggling with is there. It's in the Psalms. Grief, anger, bitterness, violence, depression, it's all there. So bring your experience into the Psalms. Pray those Psalms. And because they're given to us by the Spirit of God, they will form and shape you. And there will come a point in time, I haven't experienced it, but there'll come a point in time, he's arguing then, when someone's mind has settled down so deeply, and someone has been formed so deeply, that their call, the mirror is clear, and they can head up on the Mount of Transfiguration and have a good look. And just gaze upon the beauty and wonder of God. And Abba like Abba Isaac probably has had that kind of experience. What he's trying to do is help a novice take a few concrete steps towards that kind of contemplation. All the while saying, you know, it's going to take time, it's going to take effort, it's not something we can rush through. But there are certain very concrete things, dramatis, that you can do. And then the way the conference ends is the way conference 9 begins. Conference 9, conference 10 are two different interviews. The way conference 9 begins is, Germanus, you've got to remember, the person you are before you start praying is the person you are in prayer. And that's how conference 10 ends. Abba Isaac says the very same thing. Germanus, remember, the person you are before you start praying is the person you're going to bring in prayer. And I think that that comment in chapter, in conference 9, it begins conference 9, and it begins conference 10, sums up what we've been doing for 2 days. It sums it up. It sums up the essence of patristic spirituality and spirituality in the desert. It's designed, this particular way of worshiping God, conducting one's spiritual life, creating a certain discipline or regimen, is designed so that when a human being moves into prayer, they're ready to see something that God has for them. But it takes some effort. Henry Nouwen said that he said, a spiritual life without human effort is impossible. But it's all about the grace of God. It's not an either or. So if I was to, and then during our last hour together, we're going to build a bridge to the modern world. But if I was to ask you a very specific question, it would be in light of this dynamic and these processes and practices, what might Christ be asking each one of us to begin to think through deeply in terms of drawing nearer to him? And we're all going to be different at that point. And the reason why is this. Every one of us has been shaped differently. For example, the inheritance you received from your parents genetically is different from mine. In my family, we have some people that are really healthy, but also in our genetic inheritance, we've got some folks that struggle with Asperger's, bipolar disorder, any number of things. And some anxiety disorders within the family, and other people just humming along. So we have that inheritance. We're all different at different point, are we not? We know some of this the way the obvious didn't know. Secondly, we have our life experiences. And we're all different that way. These two have shared their life with us and their struggles with us in a very transparent, open way. We all have those life experiences, a genetic heritage, and then we have certain choices that we've made. And the choices, some positive, some negative. Those choices, because we're embodied cells with a central nervous system, they build up. Some bring life, some cripple us. So we're all different at that point. So, in light of what we've been talking about, the question would be, for each one of us, what will our discipline be? There will be commonalities. Worship. It's been wonderful. Worship. Communal confession. Prayer. Like we start out today, praying for different people. We start with the world, we narrow down and so on. All of that. But then there will be some emphases, particular individual emphases, where I need something that you don't need to the same extent. I need to have my yeses and noes will not necessarily be your specific yeses and noes. I can, I should be listening. People are straight. I should certainly listen to that. But I'm not saying that's true of you. And then by God's grace, we say, now you got to help me. Help me to know what are the steps I can take. These small steps towards holiness, and a small step towards genuine holiness is a small step towards genuine love. They are one. And that's kind of the heart and core of this intrinsic spirituality. So here's the overarching question. And then we will take a break. I have to stay with the schedule. What if you listen to a small door into this interesting desert spirituality? What do you like about it? And then what are the dangers? And what issues may be just a little bit screwy? What do you like about it? What might some of the dangers be? Or things that, I can buy about 70%, but some of the stuff I'm just going to have to leave to the side for a while. And then I'd like to talk about that when we get back, and then also work for maybe 30 minutes or so. Is, all right, what's the state of our present culture, our present world? How can we bring these two worlds together in some concrete way? All right?